Tobe. Thank you so much for inviting me to come speak. I'm excited to have a chance to learn together with everyone today. Thank you so much again to the show for inviting me, and thank you again to the sponsors. And again, the learning that we do today should be an aliyah for the Shemot, for everyone in whose memory the Shiur is sponsored. So the title of the Shiur that I gave today, I might walk around a little bit, that's okay, is Escape the Room, Pesach Edition. So I thought this would be a good kind of topic, a fitting topic to begin with, for a number of reasons. First of all, we just finished one holiday of Purim. We're about to start off in a few weeks to get to Pesach, so it'd be nice to kind of learn a little bit about Pesach together. And the topic of Escape the Room, in general, what we're going to look at today are two narratives from Tanakh, two stories from Tanakh that talk about great escapes. I talk about people escaping from a place that was about to be destroyed. And as we look through these two narratives, we're going to look at two specific ones. We're going to look at the story of Lot leaving Sodom, Lot and his family trying to leave Sodom. And we're going to look also at the story of Am Yisrael, of Bnei Yisrael leaving Egypt, right? Our story that we talk about in the upcoming weeks for Pesach. And we'll have a chance to kind of compare and contrast both these stories, see what the parallels are, what the differences are, and hopefully through that we'll be able to pull out some very powerful messages about what Pesach is all about and kind of what the mood is or the takeaways are when we're sitting at the Seder, you know, in about a month from now, what we're supposed to be focusing on after we see this parallel. My husband was giving me a little bit of a hard time. He said, if you get the title as Escape the Room, everyone's going to expect they're going to come and we're going to play an Escape the Room games, like they're going to boo you out of the room. But it's fine. I thought of a save, you know. So in general, for anyone who has played Escape the Room games, there's a lot of kind of locks and we're kind of unlocking things. So here, it's not as exciting, but what we are going to do kind of a little bit in our study today of Tanakh and comparing these two stories is we're going to look really for, there are lots of times in Tanakh where it seems like Tanakh is almost giving us a nudge, right? That these two stories are so similar, we definitely have to be comparing them. There's some message here. There's something we're supposed to be comparing and contrasting. So as we look through these stories, and we'll hopefully make this pretty interactive, I want us to kind of, as we're trying to kind of unlock, right, the different kind of connections here, we're going to look for clues. And this is kind of not just in these stories as we compare them, but, you know, as students of Tanakh, whenever we are, you know, studying Tanakh or looking at different narratives, we can keep these kind of clues in mind to help us kind of unlock the mysteries of a text. So we're going to be looking for different words that sound similar, kind of between the story of Sodom, escaping Sodom, and the story of escaping Mitzrayim. And we're also going to look for thematic parallels. What seems similar in these stories? What kind of reminds us a little bit or seems to be the same plot line? And by comparing these, we'll be able to kind of draw out kind of what are the starker differences between them. And from then, hopefully also have a few takeaways. So a lot of the ideas that I'm going to share today are not really my own. I put kind of like a further reading thing at the end. So it's based on a lot of shirim by Rabbi Menachem Liebtag, Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun, and Hanoch Waxman, who are all scholars at Yeshivat Har Etzion in Israel. So kind of based on a few of their ideas, and hopefully through our own discussions, we'll be able to come up with some new takeaways as well. Okay, so if we look to the first page, we'll try to make this interactive. As I read, there's English translations also, so everyone should feel comfortable to follow along with whichever translation works best for them. So to kind of start off, we're going to look first at the story of Lot escaping Sodom. So can anyone just remind me, why is Lot in Sodom in the first place? Just get a little bit of background. Anyone remember kind of what where we are in this point? Yes?
Abraham went this way and Lot went that.
Very good, right? sorry, remember your name? As Lisa said, right, Lot went this way, Abraham went that way, right? So we have kind of a little bit of conflict, right? Lot was Abraham's nephew. Their shepherds are kind of fighting over all their stuff, right? Lot and Abraham says, you know, it's not working. We have to split up. I'll go one way, you'll go the other. And Lot kind of looks kind of afar, and what place kind of catches his eye, right? He sees Sodom. He sees that it is, you know, Kegan Hashem, I think almost similar almost to Mitzrayim, also another parallel there. And he sees that it's very kind of lush. It's going to be very good for his shepherding, and he chooses to go there. Even though, what do we know about Sodom? What does the text tell us about Sodom? It is
corrupt,
right? Not a good place. And that's kind of where we're at. It's a little bit of an introduction. Okay, so one other point before we start kind of reading through this narrative. What's interesting is Rashi points out already at the beginning, there's one point in the story of Lot and his family in Sodom, or perhaps escaping Sodom, where we'll focus this in more detail in a few minutes, where Lot serves his guests matzah. He serves them matzot. And Rashi in the first source kind of jumps on this and says, why was he baking matzah? Right? Pesach haya, right? It was Pesach. So again, what's interesting over here, if we think about it, why exactly, you know, is Rashi saying that it's Pesach? A lot of kind of problematic questions, right? How could it be Pesach before the Jews even left Egypt? How could it be Pesach before we got the Torah? So one approach that we'll kind of work with today is that Rashi, again, is not perhaps maybe saying it's literally Pesach, but it kind of is already, Rashi is very aware of all the parallels kind of between the story of escaping Sodom and escaping Mitzrayim, and he's kind of pointing us in that direction. That maybe, you know, was it Pesach, was it not Pesach? This idea that there's so many parallels here, there's something that we just have to put ourselves in the mindset of the Pesach story to kind of frame these two stories side by side. So, yes?
Didn't Abraham give matzahs to
Moab? Also, right? Also kind of like another, right, parallel of what's going on here, like with the Malachim, right? Why exactly are we kind of connecting these two stories? So let's kind of start learning through this together. I want to kind of invite you, we'll read kind of section by section. I'll read in Hebrew, I'll kind of give a translation also in English, and you can follow along. And what I want us to think about as we read through it is what kind of comes to mind, what parallels come to mind when we think of these two stories. Just start, we'll look more closely at the Exodus from Egypt a little bit later, but what are kind of the parallels that come to mind that we can kind of throw out? Okay, so we'll start off. We're going to be reading over here in Bereishit Perek Yutet, and we're starting kind of in the middle of the story when the angels are coming already to stone to try to take Lot out. So we'll start from Pasuk Aleph. So again, Bereishit Perek Yutet, source number 2. Vayavo shnei malachim stoma ba'erev, v'lot yoshev b'shar stom, v'yar lot v'yikam l'pratam v'yishtachu apayim arza. So again, the two angels come to stone. Lot sees them, he's standing by the gate, and he gets up to meet them. Vayomer, hinena adoni sur na el beit avadchem, v'linu v'rachtu raglechem, v'hishkamtem v'halachtem l'zarkachem, v'yomer lo ki v'rachov nali. So Lot at first seems, you know, very positive. He's jumping up. He's telling them, please come to my house, your servant's house. You'll stay here all night. And then in the morning, you'll go on your way. And they say, no, we're fine. We're going to stay on the street. Well, you know, we'll find a place to sleep. We don't need to come to your house. Vayitzar ba me'ot, vayisur ulav, vayavo el beito, vayasahem mishter umatzot afa vayochelu. But really, Vayitzar b'hem, Lot doesn't give up. You know, he really wants those guests to come to his house, and he pushes them. He says, no, please come to my house. They decide to come. He makes a feast. He bakes matzah, and everyone eats. At the end, this is again kind of happening like early evening, but now things kind of take a little bit of a darker turn. This is Pasuk Dalet. Terem ishkavu ve'anshei ha'ir, anshei stom, nasovu al habayit, minar v'ad zakein, kol ha'am mikatzet. The entire town comes and surrounds Lot's bayit, surrounds Lot's house. Vayikarua Lot, vayomer lu, ayei anashim asher ba'u elecha halayla, hotziem alinu v'nedaotam. And again, a very extreme demand over here, right? They call out to Lot and they say, throw your guests out of the house, right? There's a threat of sexual violence that are made also, throw them out. And we want to, again, there's almost like a violent response here. And again, the Mefarshim talk about whether or not in Sodom you're allowed to have guests or not, and kind of the whole culture there, right, that we spoke about before, the how inhospitable it was and the different rules that they had. But here again, there are threats being made against the guests in Lot's house. What is he going to do? Pasuk Hey, Vayikaru al Lot, Vayomer. Oh, sorry, just read that one. So we'll go on to Pasuk Vav. Vayetzeh aleihem Lot hapetcha v'hadelet sagar acharav. Lot goes out to speak to them. He steps out of his house and he closes the door behind him, right? Presumably to kind of protect his guests as he goes out to speak to them. And he says, Vayomer al na achai tera'u, like, please, my brothers, you know, don't do this. Hinena al ishtei banot asher lo yaduish otziana etzen aleihem v'yisuahem katol be'enechem. Rakla Anashim Ha'el, Al Tasu Davar, Kiel Ken Ba'u, Bitzel Korati. Very kind of the story gets much stranger. And Lot basically tells them, please don't do anything against my guests, but who can you have? My daughters. And I'll throw my daughters, you know, out to you. You can do to them whatever you like. But do not do anything to my guests, because they've come Bitzel Korati. They've come kind of under my house, right, under my protection. I don't want anything to happen to them. So we'll come back to that point a little bit later. Vayomru gash hala, vayomru ha'achad ba'alagur, v'yishvot shvot ata, v'yishvot shvot ata nera lacha mehem. Vayitzaru ba'ish b'lotz ma'od, vayigashu l'shbor et hadelet. The mob does not like this. They pressure Lot, and they said, oh, you know, you were the stranger that came to us, and now you're going to play the judge? We're going to do even worse to you than we threatened to do to your guests. And they kind of start to almost break down the door. And what happens now? The angels who were watching, right, and who Lot believes are just regular guests, decide that they, at this point, the situation has escalated enough that they need to get involved. And Pasuk Yud, Vayishlachu Anashim et Yadam. They send out their hands, Vayaviu et Lot Aleihem Abayita, Ve'ed Hadelet Sagru. They yank kind of Lot back in, they close the door, Ve'et Anashim Asher Patah Habayit Hiku B'san Beirim, Mikaton Ve'ad Gadol Ve'elulim So HaPatah. And they smite everyone outside the house with blindness, so the mob cannot find the door. Vayomar Anashim El Lot, Od Milacha Po, Hatan Vanecho V'notecha V'chol Asher L'cha Be'ir Chotzi Min HaMakom. The angels get very serious for Lot. They say, "What? Who else do you have here? You have a family? Who else is living in this house? We need to take all of you out of this place." Why? The next pasuk, "Himashkitim anachnu et makom hazeh, hikadla tzakatam et pnei Hashem, ve'shachinu Hashem l'hashta." Because we are going to be mashkit, we are going to destroy this place. God has heard the cry of the people who are here, the oppressed kind of people who are oppressed perhaps by stone. And God has sent us here to destroy this place. So there's still more of the story, but we'll pause here for a second. Any thoughts so far about the story? Anything sound familiar or any parallels we can think of when we think of the story of leaving Egypt? Any thoughts? Yes?
Well, the idea of the they came... It's choshech that became blind.
Okay, very nice, right? Almost like this symbolism, right, of like almost a plague of darkness, right? People looking around, not being able to find things. Great. Any other thoughts? What else kind of sounds familiar? Words or parallels? Yeah.
Kind of doorways and roofs.
Okay. Why is that? Why does that make us think of Egypt?
It's because of the painting the lintel of the house.
Okay. Excellent. Right. So the whole idea of there seems to be what we would call a milah mancha, right, or a word that kind of keeps repeating itself in a passage of Tanakh, which is kind of repeating itself on purpose. As a technique to kind of draw importance to it. So we see, right, a lot of house metaphors, right? House, lintel, right, the chatzer, right, the doorway, and right, reminds us a lot of what happened with the Exodus of Egypt, right? Painting, kind of what we'll come back to a little bit later, right? Putting the blood on the door, right? A lot of kind of that focus of houses. So we're gonna come back to that. Great. Anything else sound familiar or different? Yeah.
It says because the cry of them crying out, right? The Bnei Israel were crying out.
Yeah. For sure, right? Crying out, oppression, right? Sounds very much kind of like what, why we're being taken out, right? Also of Egypt. Anything else? See if we can get a few more. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they use the term mashkisim, and that's sort of like when Hashem went over the houses and the mashkis killed the Egyptians.
Very good, right? So this idea, right, of kind of like, and we'll kind of paint this a little bit of a deeper picture, almost that when you're in the house, you're safe, right? But what happens outside the house? Danger, right? Danger, destruction, death perhaps, right? Similar kind of to the night that we left Egypt. The same thing. We're gonna see that, right? We're gonna see that parallel, right? We'll see it inside. That again, when you're in a house, you're safe as long as the blood is on the door. God will pass over you, right? Pasach, right? And that means that if God's passing over you, what's happening to everyone else, right? Danger, destruction, death. So you're only safe kind of when you're inside. I heard something else from anyone else had a... Yeah.
Language of potsi.
For sure, right? This idea of like taking out, right? People being taken out of a place, and that's like kind of a good way to kind of get back in the story where we see, this is where we're going to get to our parallels and differences, does Lot actually want to leave? And what happens when he tries to leave? So as we kind of go through now the second half of the story, let's think a little bit about, again, also with the Exodus of Egypt, what seems similar, what seems different. So we're going to turn the page over, continuing on in the story. So remember, the last thing we saw, the angels are like, we have to get you out of here, we're leaving, get your family together, who do you have here? And Pasuk Yudal, Lot says, Vayitzei Lot, Vayitzru al Chotanav, Lothei Bnotav, Vayomer, Kumu Tzu'u min ha-makom hazeh, Ki Mashrit Hashem et ha'ir, Vayhi Kemetzafek Be'inei Chatanav. So Lot goes and he speaks to his son-in-laws, right? So assumingly he had other daughters who were married, and he tells his son-in-laws, we have to get out of here, the angels are telling us we have to leave, this place is going to be destroyed. And what is their reaction? They laugh at him. Like, are you kidding me? Like, what's going on? They do not take him seriously, right? There isn't really that idea of respect, and they kind of laugh at him. The story continues. Pasuk Tedvav, Ukmo Hashachar Allah, Vayotziehu Hamilachim Belot Lemor, Kum kapan ishtecha v'chnei v'notecha nimsa'ot pen tasafer ba'alvon ha'ir. And the angels tell him, time is past, it's almost dawn. Think about also time frames over here when we compare it to Egypt. It's time to go. Take your wife, take your two other daughters. We are leaving, otherwise you will get caught up in the sin of the city and the destruction of the city. Pasuk tet zayin, beit ma meha. Lot lingers, right? He kind of hesitates a little bit. By hazku ha'anashim biyado, ubiyad ishto, ubiyad shnei v'notav, v'chemlat Hashem Allah lo yitziyehu, by nechehu mechutz la'ir. Right? They actually, it seems like the angels, what imagery does this kind of show? It's like the angels are almost like literally dragging him, right, to a place, right? And just kind of dragging him to go. He has him and his wife and his other daughters. And it's interesting, it also says that why are they being taken out? A reason is being thrown in kind of over here, right? Bechemlat Hashem Allah, right? Because God kind of has mercy on him. So it's kind of a sense of, you know, well, think about, right? Is it for Lot? Is it for Abraham? And God, this is a merciful thing. But God is still almost having these angels drag him out, right? It's almost like you're taking a kid to a doctor's appointment here, right? You're kind of literally dragging them out. They do not want to go. And they're being dragged out. And Pasuk, so we'll keep going. Pasuk Yudzayin. Vayehi kehotziam otam hachutza. Vayomar himalet al nafshecha. Al tabit acharecha. Ve'al tamor bechol hakikar hahara. Himalet hen tesafet. Right? They get them out and they say, okay, just keep going. Do not look back, right? Or you're going to get caught up again in all of this destruction. Keep going and escape to the mountain. And this point, what's interesting is Lot kind of pushes back, right? You can imagine, you know, this whole situation is very tense, right? This whole town's about to be destroyed. He was just pulled out. But Lot is like, no, let's have a little bit of a discussion here about how far I can go. And Pasuk Yotad, he says, Hine na matzati avadecha chen beinecha, psikadel chazdecha asher asiti imadi lechayot et nafshi, v'chof inoi kala avali tahara pen tevakini hara'av v'meti. Like, I can't, you know, please don't, you know, again, he thanks him for the chesed. He said, I can't really escape to the mountain. Is there any, you know, if I have to go to the mountain, it might overtake me, right? The destruction that's coming. And he makes a request. And Pasuk up, and he asks, you know, there's this little city that's there. It's a small city. Isn't it kind of so small? It's interesting that the same title, right? Soar, it being small. Let me just escape there. So almost even with being dragged out, still doesn't want to kind of leave neighborhoods, right, or leave kind of like the whole area. Is there another place here that I can remain that's kind of close to where I was before? And, you know, can somehow be excluded from this edict of destruction? And the angels actually give in. They say, oh, he continues writing Pasuk Kafalov, Vayomar Elav, Hine Nasati Panecha Gamal Devar Hazel, Vilti Hafu Ta'ir, Asher Dibarta. Right? And the angels say, okay, that's fine. They move on. Pasuk Kafet, Maher Himalit Shama, Glo Yuchal Asot Zavar, Avoecha Shama, Al Ken Kara Shem Ha'ir Tsoar. The angels say, fine, you can go to that city. That's why it's called Tsoar. Or it gives us kind of like a postscript after, but go fast. Right? There's an idea of kind of moving fast. Maher, we'll skip to the end. Lot escapes, but as we know, what's kind of the last part of the story? What happens to the rest of his family?
His wife turned around.
Yes, she's not supposed to turn around, but she can't look away. She turns around, right? She becomes a pillar of salt, right? And then the end of the story also kind of has a very troubling kind of end where we know Lot ends up in the cave. His daughters believe that, you know, the entire world has been destroyed, right? They get him drunk, they sleep with him in different nights, and from this, we begin the nations of Ammon and Moab, right? So again, just kind of a very troubling ending to a very troubling story. Based on kind of what we saw now, any other parallels or anything else kind of spark our minds when we think of leaving Egypt, based on kind of the second half that we saw? Could be differences, could be similarities. Yes. Oh, yes. Start the
urgency.
Urgency. Very good. Right. Kind of like the urgency. Where do we see that? Kind of in the Pesach story.
When they leave
Egypt. Very good. Right. Even they don't even have time, right, to bake matzo. There's idea of being rushed out. Yes.
Moshe and Lot looks like a jester.
For sure, right? Kind of the same idea, like who's being believed, who's not, with these threats of destruction, right? The same idea, right? Excellent, right? Lot me not being believed in this case either. Yeah?
The word by Yifazeg is like Hashem took us out, God removed Israel.
Right, very nice, right? The idea of like God taking us out with an outstretched hand, right? We still have the same kind of parallel, the same kind of linguistic parallels that exist kind of over here. Excellent. Any other final thoughts? If anyone can think of anything, feel free to chime in. So as we see over here, we really have numerous kind of parallels going on. We'll have a chance now to look a little bit at the story from Egypt. And as we see, a lot of, as people kind of mentioned, a lot of the words that come up in both of these, we see the idea of Yatzah. We spoke about the focus on a bayit, the focus on a house, the idea of Beit Mamea, the lingering, right? Well, this is something we didn't focus on so much, but we'll come back to, that, you know, perhaps Lot doesn't exactly want to leave, and we'll come back to that idea of how that can parallel when we think about leaving Mitzrayim. The idea of being taken out, right, Hutsiu, the idea of Hikaf, right, God kind of smiting stone the same way that he smites Egypt, and the Tzaakah, the people pointed out as well. What's interesting also is we have the idea of when Lot invites them home, he invites them, he says, come to Beit Avadchem, right, come to the house of your servant. You know, he's saying that as almost like a way of politeness, but we'll see also, right, in Egypt, we literally are still slaves, or servants, right, at that time, so kind of an interesting parallel as well. So clearly the story wants us to be, or the Tanakh, sorry, wants us to be comparing these two stories. But what's the takeaway? So I want to kind of shift gears a little bit. I'll take a comment in a second. We're going to shift gears and look now at a couple of parakeets in Sefer Shemot and look a little bit at the experience of leaving Mitzrayim, of leaving Egypt. And we'll see if we can kind of connect the dots, bring everything home, figure out exactly what the differences, the parallels are, and again, try to get to our takeaway message. Yeah, I saw a hand in the back. Yeah.
I think it's also the unknown that it chose in this, that it's not easy for us to pick up and go, even though we know everything outside
Excellent.
Is falling apart.
For sure.
It's still just some things that it's unknown. It's
100%, right? I think change for many people, definitely myself also, right, can be a scary thing, right? It's hard to do, even if you know it's the right decision. Right, so 100%, right, even when we're being told to leave Mitzrayim, you know, can we almost see a little bit of the Lot reaction in a sympathetic way, right, when we were leaving Egypt? Are we going to be able to do this? Are we, and we know kind of, it's a spoiler alert, right, in the Midbar, in the desert,
yeah.
It wasn't very easy for the Jewish people to adapt to this new life, yeah.
Also, Lot was very rich. It's very hard to leave your riches.
For sure.
And B'nai Yisrael, that's it, 4/5 stayed. Were killed because they didn't really want to leave either.
Right, for sure. Right, the Midrash kind of points out, right, that in perhaps during the plague of darkness, right, that not everyone was able to leave. Right, and it's interesting, kind of, right. When are we able to leave situations and extricate ourselves from them? When is it more difficult? For sure. And I think these are really great questions to think about, and what Tanakh wants us to think about when we're comparing and contrasting these narratives. Okay, so let's keep going in the source packet. So now we're on the bottom of the source number 3. It's kind of section 2, Escaping Egypt. And we're going to look a little bit at some of the different mitzvot that were given for the original Pesach Seder, right? The first Pesach Seder that happened the night that we left Egypt. And we're going to try to kind of come up with what are the different comparisons, how we can contrast these stories. So the first thing that we're told, just to kind of store this information in the back of our heads, is there's a number of mitzvot, a number of commands B'nai Yisrael are given before they are to exit Egypt. The first one is the idea of Kiddush HaChodesh, of kind of changing our calendar, and we're told, HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim Rishon Hu Lechem L'Chodshei HaShanah. And the first kind of thing that we're told is already, just keep us in our minds when we come to the discussion at the end, is that we're going to be switching our calendar, right? We're now on a lunar calendar, the idea of a Rosh Chodesh, so that's kind of the first mitzvah that we're given, this idea of time. And then it goes on to a more kind of familiar command, but perhaps strange at that time, that Am Yisrael or B'nai Yisrael at this point are to take a sacrifice, right? They're supposed to do a Korban Pesach, and they're supposed to start kind of prepping for this almost a month in advance. So this is the Korban that they're going to be shafting on the night that they leave Egypt. So they're told, right, everyone must take a sel, a beit avot, a sel, a bayit, right, a lamb for a household. So we see also what word is coming up here, right, the same idea of house, right, bayit is being repeated. And it goes on, and we're told kind of some of the rules that we're obviously very familiar with, right, that you have to keep this lamb, and then on the 14th, you're going to shaft it, right? And it says in Pasuk Zayin, V'lachu min hadam, v'datniu al shtei ha-mezuzot v'al ha-mashkov al ha-batim, asher yochelu otal bahem. You have to put the blood on kind of the doorpost. I remember, I think this was my year in Israel, going to Pesach Seder, one of my teachers in Alon Shavuot, in the Gush, and walking around, there were all these different houses where the kids had taken like red paper to put kind of on the door. So everyone kind of modeled that out. So you really felt that kind of experience. So here too, you have all these different houses that are putting the blood kind of on the doorpost, right, kind of on the size and the lintel of these different houses. We'll get back to that also, right? We saw kind of a few parallels to that in our story. Pasuk Tet, we're told kind of how we're supposed to eat it. Al tachilu mimenu na, uvashel mevushal b'mayim, ki'im salu eish rosho al karav al kerbo. Do not boil it, don't, you know, cut it up. It needs to be kind of on a spit, right? So the form of the Korban Pesach has to be maintained. And then we're told, you know, you can't leave any of it until the morning. Pasuk Yudala, v'kacha tachilu oto matznechem chagurim, nalachichem beraglechem, makalchichem beyadchem, v'chaltem oto v'chipazon, Pesach Hula Hashem. The first Pesach Seder is supposed to feel what? Very
rushed,
right? Urgency. You have to be dressed, your backpack's on, right? Everyone is kind of like coats on, ready to go. That's kind of how we're eating the very first Pesach Seder, ready to go. And it goes on, and we see these milot manfot, these keywords coming up again. Pasuk Yubet, Vavarti Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Belayla Hazeh, happening at night. Vehiketi Kol Bechor Be'eretz Mitzrayim, right? God tells us a little bit about Makap Becharot, that every Bechor is going to be smitten, right? Or kind of, yeah, we'll go with that, with Hika, that same word. Again, Me'adam Be'imah, Becholo Kei Mitzrayim, Ma'aseh Sfatim Ani Hashem. Vaya Adam Lachem Le'ot Al Habatim, Asher Atem Sham. Vere'iti Et Hadam U'Pasim. Even though God will be destroying things outside of the homes, in the actual homes of the Jewish people, as long as there is blood on the doors, they will be safe. God will pass over them. Right? And there will be no plague on you to destroy you when God comes to attack the land of Egypt. And the last kind of parts we'll read here before we pause to discuss it, Moshe, right, again, then gives, these are the commands that are told to Moshe. He then goes and shares these commands with Bnei Israel. And he tells them again about, you know, shafting the Korban Pesach, putting the blood on the two sides. And he adds in, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vevar Hashem l'ngofet Mitzrayim v'ra'at ha'dam al mashkot v'al shem ezuzot v'pasach Hashem al ha'petach, as we said before, God will pass over you. V'lo yiten ha'mashrit lavo el batechem l'ngof. Right, the destroyer will not be able to come into your homes. Right, this idea that, you know, stay inside, do not leave. As long as you are in the house, you are safe. And the last thing that we see is just kind of the time frame. It happens bechatzi halayla. Right, this idea of like when exactly Makap Becharot takes place, the idea of night. And then again, vayikam paro laila hu v'chol avadav v'mitzrayim v'tehit sa'aka gedola v'mitzrayim. Right, people pointed out before, right, the word sa'aka. We see that again. And if we turn the page over, we know that the end of the story, at the end of Makat Becharot, Paro can't take it anymore. He calls to Moshe and Aaron. He tells them, Kumu tzu'u mitochami. Get out. Just go. I don't want you here anymore. And finally, what's interesting here in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, it's not just the Paro. All of the Mitzrayim want the Jews to leave. But techazeg Mitzrayim al ha'am l'maher l'shalcha min ha'aretz. But that same language we saw a little before below, right, where the angels have to like grab him and drag him out. Here it's not the angels doing that to the Jewish people. What's happening?
The Egyptians
are like, just get out. We don't want you here. And there's this urgency with which they are being pushed out. And finally, people mentioned before in Pasuk Lamed Tet, there's so much of a rush that Bnei Israel don't even have a chance to finish baking bread, right? That's why we have one of the reasons why we have matzot. It says over here, the loyachu lehit mameya. They did not have time to relax. Right? There was always this tremendous, tremendous urgency that was going on. Okay, so we'll pause here for a second. Any thoughts here? So we've seen kind of a lot of these parallels, kind of back and forth. In the back, I kind of gave you guys a cheat sheet because a lot of the parallels kind of written up. I want us to kind of come up with them on our own first, but this might help you kind of remember it. But as we shared before, we've seen a lot of the linguistic parallels, a lot of the different words, the house, the being rushed by Kasku, right, grabbing people and pulling them out, smiting people, haku. All of these kind of linguistic parallels that we see. A lot of thematic parallels also, kind of shared before. The idea that there's danger kind of in the house, but not outside the house. And as long as you're in the house, you'll be protected. A plague is happening outside, right? As people shared, right? Makap Becharot is happening outside. And only inside the house, we are safe. People shared also, right? It sounds very similar to the Makkah of Choshech, right? Even darkness. Add in some of the shirim that I was reading when I was preparing, was there's also almost this idea, very similar to Bara, right? The plague of hail, right? What do we know with hail, right? Everything that came down and destroyed kind of Egypt, very similar to what? What ends up happening to stone. It's almost like the Makot are being kind of fitted in to this in the same kind of approach. The time frame, in both of these, the story happens at night, And then in the morning, right, it happens all throughout the night. In the morning, that's towards dawn, is kind of when Lot is being rushed out, when the Jewish people are being taken out of Mitzrayim. Both of these kind of revolve around a family, right, whether it's an individual family of Lot or kind of many units of families in Mitzrayim of the Jewish people. The idea of being rushed out with even a second, without a second to delay. These are kind of some of the major parallels. So without looking kind of at the sheet, anyone think of any differences? What are things that are, why, A, what are the differences? And B, why do you think we're being pushed to kind of parallel these stories? We've definitely seen all the connections, but why? What's kind of the messages that we're supposed to be taking away from this? Yeah?
One major difference I'm seeing is leadership. Like, Lot is not an effective leader. He's not able to convince even his sons-in-law.
Yeah.
He's not really, like, he himself is carrying. Whereas with Moshe and maybe Aaron also, you see, you know, the paradigms of leadership.
Yeah, for sure. Very nice. Yeah.
Maybe to continue your headline, I mean, it seems like Lot, I mean, I wouldn't think comparing these two stories, period, because I just don't see Sodom as a place that I compare to what happened to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if they were Israelites or not, or all the people were there. I mean, I really never really thought about these two stories as a comparison. But we see the angels, we see that Lot at least was an important guy for somebody, for God, for somebody, and maybe because of his relation to Abraham and getting his family.
Sure.
In Lot's story, it's really the story of the family in Egypt, so it's the story of the nation.
Okay, excellent. So I think a couple things that you're pointing out, right? A is that we're moving kind of from family to nation. So Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun is one of the people who writes a little bit about this topic. He shares also that both these stories are almost about births of nations, right? That on one hand, we have kind of the Jewish people really become a nation when we leave Egypt. And so too, it's a little bit of a flip, you know, not exactly in a positive way, but we have the births of the nations of Moab and Ammon after leaving Sodom, right? Even though that's done right through incest and it's done in a strange way, there still is this idea of births of nations to kind of the birth of the Jewish people. It's interesting also, remind me your name, sorry.
Deborah.
Deborah is sharing, it's interesting this idea perhaps that why is Lot chosen? Because this idea also of the Jewish people being chosen to come out of Egypt, and we'll kind of develop that idea also, there seems to be some sort of selection. Like you've done something to deserve to be saved, and is that true with the Jewish people or not? Yes?
Well, but the Jewish people are explicitly told they have to do something.
Okay, excellent.
Lot was not told to do something explicitly other than get out.
For sure.
I didn't get it yet, I think.
Yeah, he would have to show his allegiance to a commandment.
For sure. Excellent. And remember your name.
Kinneret.
So I think, as Kinneret is saying, also a very important point that we'll have a chance to kind of unpack here a little bit, that on one hand, what's a big focus when we look at the Exodus from Egypt is there's a lot of mitzvot that we are given. There's a lot of commands that we are given. So A, is that right? And why is Lot not given those commands? What's interesting, right, is he still, of his own volition, shows he still has that spark of Abraham in him, right, when he invites guests, right, even the heart of stone, there's still that spark in Lot that still exists, that he's still trying to maintain that. But we'll see how it's a little bit of a much darker kind of existence. And again, you know, the Jewish people are given these commands almost to help them kind of break that cycle and get out. So we'll see almost, you know, could it be that the story of the Exodus of Egypt is written in this way to remind us or give us a solution? You know, how do we make sure the Jews are going to not end up like Lot? How are we going to make sure that they're actually able to break out? Yes?
And to me, that's the crux of the story. So Lot doesn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And the Jewish people do, and that's the difference in the story. Lot, they get to the cave and they're done for. They're the last tribe. So they have to solve the problem. Whereas the Jewish people go out with the moon and they've been shown that there's a greater being that he's going to take care of them.
Yeah.
And again, it could go back to the leadership thing too, because Lot didn't really have leadership.
Yeah.
Or Amuna, I guess.
No, for sure. And I think that's a really interesting way of kind of framing it, right? What's interesting is if we think about the end of the story with Lot, right, where the whole incident with his daughters, right, and creating those nations, that's a parallel almost to a different story, if we think about it, to the post-flood kind of narrative of Noah, right? That after kind of surviving the flood, there's also some incident that's very unclear what happens with Noah, right, and his sons or his grandson. And both of those, you could almost frame it as going through a traumatic experience, traumatic destruction, feeling kind of that, you know, can you get your life back together and start again? Or is there this hopelessness and kind of giving up or turning to kind of alternate kind of methods? So here it's a question of, you know, leaving Egypt, and we see it as the birth, right? How we're in a more positive way. We're able to go out, right, the Yad Ramah, we're able to go out with the outstretched hand and kind of start, hopefully, the life of the Jewish people, or we can see it as we can never get over this destruction kind of Egypt. So really kind of wonderful ideas, I think, that everyone is sharing. I want to bring it kind of together, kind of to frame perhaps a couple of major takeaways that we can have from this. So again, I think one of the major differences that we see really in the story is a difference, as a lot of people focused on, between Lot and the Jewish people. That Lot, as much as he has that spark of Abraham still in him, he very much does not want to leave. It is very hard for him to break from Sodom. And if we think about even the original reason that he ended up in Sodom, right? He was drawn there for, it seems a little bit financial, right? He was going to be able to make some money. It would work for his family. Yes?
No, it goes beyond that.
Yeah.
Because it has to do with the fact that what Lot allowed his shepherds to do and not taking his stand then as to what is appropriate.
For sure.
His whole being was not a leader in the positive sense of the word.
Interesting. So almost even not stopping, right, his shepherds was almost kind of starting that cycle. So yeah, very, very interesting. And Lot basically ends up, he's drawn to stone because of the financial reasons. He's you know, it's almost the argument with Lot is that it's fine, an interesting for a second year, people can do for homework, right, to think of the comparisons between Lot and Noah, right? Also kind of very similar kind of ideas then, where you have someone who's somewhat a positive character trying to hold, right, trying to, again, being safe, and again, trying to, that would be the part two, the next secret room, right? And trying to hold themselves strong kind of in environments. Are they able to do it? Lot believes he can. He believes he can set up a house based on the values of Abraham Avinu in stone, that he'll be able to, it won't affect him, it won't affect his family. I think Lot almost is a tragic character. You see him, you know, trying to invite the angels in, going against the whole kind of mold of stone, wanting to have guests, wanting to kind of keep things in a positive sense. But then we see how warped it is, right? As much as he pulls guests in, you know, and he wants to protect them, he goes out of the door to protect them, what's his way of protecting his guests? I'm going to offer his daughters, right? And I think that's definitely done, right? That's also similar parallel. There's not, right, a lot of parallels here to the story at the end of Sefer Shoftim of Pilegesh Begiva, where we have a similar kind of demand being made of people are trying to save guests by throwing daughters or throwing a servant kind of off to the mob. And I think it's supposed to show us, again, how twisted things have become and how far people have fallen from societal norms. And again, here, you know, we see here with Lot, he's trying, but he's already been shifted. And I think the darkest or the most depressing part about Lot is I picture this scene where he's begging his family to come with him. And what happens? They laugh at him, right? They're like, we're not leaving. We're not leaving. This is our home. We're staying in Sodom. Like, what are you talking about? You're the crazy person who keeps inviting guests. Like, they are very much, they've become part of Sodom. His daughters have married into, you know, that society. And at the end, when he's finally able to escape, even with half his family, because most of his family won't even come with him, you know, what's the reaction? His wife can't, right? She can't even look away, so she's lost. And we read that very kind of strange exchange where Lot is basically begging the Malachim, the angels, to let him stay in like a satellite neighborhood of stone, right? He can't even leave the area. He can't really break away from it. And then we see at the end what happens with his daughters, and again, just how twisted and everything has kind of become. I think it's a very kind of tragic tale of, you know, it's very hard to break out of a culture into which you've been assimilated, into which you've chosen. And that's something that Lot may have tried to do, but ultimately and tragically fails. And I think the question here is, we have a similar question when it comes to the Jews leaving Mitzrayim. On one end, one of the biggest questions that we see kind of throughout the other Sfarim of Tanakh is after the Jews are freed from Mitzrayim, are they going to kind of, you know, you can take the Jews out of Egypt, but can you take Egypt out of the Jews, right? Are they going to be able to break that slave mentality or not? And what's interesting also is I think that there are different kind of ideas surrounding what level Am Yisrael was on when they were taken out of Egypt. Right? On one hand, you know, what they, you know, as we learn, you know, and sometimes we learn in elementary school that, you know, they didn't change their names, they didn't change their clothes, they didn't change anything, they were perfectly separate. That's like one story that we've told, or that we are told, kind of as kids. But there's a different reality that's also a little bit reflected both in Tanakh and also in the Midrash, right? The idea of what level of tum'ah, what level of purity, right, the Jewish people were on. As I think you mentioned right before, right, the idea of Matar Choshech, the Midrash says that, you know, half of the, or one-fifth, right, were the only people that left from Mitzrayim, that some of them weren't even able to get out, they were punished in that way. What I want to show you is very quickly an idea that Rabbi Nachman Litag shares. This is source number 4. And he directs us to a chapter in Yechezkel, in Sefer Yechezkel, that talks a little bit about leaving Egypt. And in this parak, he talks about how, or in Yechezkel kind of quotes this idea that the Jewish people were told before they left Mitzrayim to kind of throw away their Avodah Zarah that was linked to Mitzrayim. We'll just read a couple of parts of it in Pasuk Zayin. Vayomar aleihem ish shikutzei einav hishlichu v'gilgulei Mitzrayim al titamu. They were told, before you leave Egypt, you have to throw away your idols. Implying that the Jewish people, when they were in Egypt for so long, for hundreds of years, had really, even though they were slaves and they were being oppressed, had become somewhat assimilated into Egyptian culture. And God was almost telling them, as a prerequisite to being saved, they had to cast away their idols. But again, as it says, kind of interesting enough in Yechezkel, the Jewish people did not do that. In Pasuk Chet, v'et gilgulei Mitzrayim lo azvu, they did not throw away their kind of idols of Mitzrayim. But at the same time, and God kind of was about, or was going to perhaps cast his wrath on them also, but at the end of the last pasuk, he decides not to, v'as laman shmi. But for God says, for his own name, almost for like to sanctify his own name, he would not destroy them, even though Am Yisrael didn't exactly deserve to be saved. A similar kind of argument we hear throughout Tanakh when the Jewish people kind of misbehave, right? Moshe is arguing on their behalf, and, you know, God should do it for his own name, right, to not destroy us. But again, a very different narrative here, or different piece of information here, that the Jewish people were very kind of assimilated into Egyptian culture. Yes?
I don't know, but what brings to mind when I'm reading all this is the Holocaust, that we were told by many people, like, I know Zev Jabotinsky urged people to leave Europe because people saw what was coming, but people didn't want to leave. They really didn't want to leave. And they were assimilated. The most assimilated place, Germany, mm-hmm. the place that gave us the most rights, and where we were, you know, we really got into their culture, was where it all started.
Right.
And
It's always hard when we bring like parallels right from modern times, but definitely right. That's definitely an approach one could make, and we see in different readings.
I think there's another thing that they don't address, which is that there are the attitude of even Orthodox Jews towards those who live much more cloistered Jewish life, and finding that uncomfortable, finding the Hasidish groups, the Haredi groups, who do not want to deviate from anything, and viewing it with a negative attitude, and yet if you look at it, they are choosing a life that doesn't want to be infiltrated by anything that two generations down, or one generation down, is going to look like this. And so I'm not, whether judging or not, I find it ironic that even more modern Orthodox Jews have difficulty.
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I think just as we bring this together, so we get to wrap up, I think one of the major questions, you're right, is, especially I think this is the mandate of Jews living in the modern world as religious people, how do we balance this out? How do we balance maintaining our own values while really, you know, being able to take the positive aspects of society and integrate ourselves in society without losing our way? Right? And how are we able to kind of create that filter? And one thing I'll kind of just to bring together, the question we've kind of been asking, or we've been focusing on how assimilated Lot was and how he kind of failed in that mission. But the question we have to answer before we leave, right, is how did Am Yisrael succeed? How were they able to break away? Especially when looking at Yechezkel, it seems that they were not really in such a great place spiritually before they left Mitzrayim. So for this, I want us to go back to some of the mitzvot. I think people pointed that out. And I think the big difference here, this is what's argument is made by Rav Yoel Ben-Nun as well, is that there were these major mitzvot that Am Yisrael were given, And the mitzvot they were given the night of the Seder were specific to help them break with Egyptian culture. And some of the examples to give, the most famous one really is Korban Pesach, right? And as we know, right, many Mepharshim tell us that the lamb that they were supposed to bring was what? Was the Egyptian god. And what they're told to do is to take this god and shaft it, then publicly put the blood kind of on the doors. And not just that, we read the pasuk of you're supposed to keep it on the spit, right? You can't like hide it up and be like, oh no, it's chillin', right? You have to like very much, right? You have to see publicly what this was. Like no one can hide, no one can hide from it. So that's kind of one interesting question, and I'll share one point about that as well. But also, even the first mitzvah we're given, right, of Rosh Chodesh, is already switching our calendar from a lunar calendar to a solar calendar. If we think about Egyptian culture, right, already that idea, right, to kind of make that switch. So I just wanted to kind of, as we wrap up, to share a beautiful idea by the Ibn Ezra, who kind of changes a little bit of what you're thinking about the Korban Pesach. We had just said, which I think is the standard approach, which is that the Korban Pesach was, you know, B'nai Yisrael had to shaft the god of the Egyptians, put its blood publicly on the doors, and basically publicly break with Egyptian culture. But Ibn Ezra kind of spins it a little bit differently. We'll just read source number 5 as we wrap up. And he brings that idea at the beginning. He says, for Rabbi Mamru, many people say, right, really, what are they doing? It was to show publicly that they had killed the Egyptian god. But then he says, well, maybe not exactly. We'll skip to the next underlined part. The Ilum Hayaken, Hayazeb is Sha'ar HaHatzer. He gives a little bit of Egyptian kind of architecture over here. He says, if that was true, they would have done it at the gate of their courtyard. If you think about it, it's almost, I think a little bit when I'm watching the show, a little bit similar, right? You have like the entrance, the door, then you have like right the parking lot or where you drive up, and then you have the gate. So he's like, if they really were trying to show the Egyptians, they were breaking Egyptian culture, where should the blood have gone? Right? On the gate, when you walk in, not the gate of their mashkof, or the lintel of the house. So why are they doing the lintel of the house? That they did it on the house, because really, it was much more, it was to atone for anyone eating in the house. And I would like to kind of expand this idea that maybe it's not about breaking publicly when you're kind of trying to show for everyone else, oh, I'm breaking publicly with this culture, but really, it's about internally kind of making that decision. And to think about, really, not so much about the public, and there is an aspect of that with the way they would check, you know, the animal, but really, it's about what were the discussions that every Jewish family was having on that night as they were preparing to leave Egypt. Right? Was it that they had the blood on the outside door, or was the blood really on the inside? And it was more kind of just for their family to see, for their family to look at, and to have those kind of private, you know, family discussions about what, kind of similar to a lot of the points people made here, about what parts of the culture are we taking in, what parts of the culture are we breaking with, and how are we going to be strong as a family, and what are our values, what's our value system as a family as we prepare to leave Egypt? Right, and kind of an idea of focusing not just on the exciting, or not so much exciting, but the more abrupt external breaking, but much more on the internal one. And to conclude, Rabbi Levtag kind of shares what I thought when I first heard it was a fascinating idea, which was that it's not just about the Korban Pesach, but he points out that the entire meal, the entire Pesach Seder, is almost like an anti-Egyptian culture meal, if you think about it. And he talks about how, you know, bread and beer being here symbolic of chametz, are really kind of part and parcel of what Egyptian culture was all about. The idea of baking bread, the idea of beer, and I took some ideas here from different museums. You can see kind of in the walls, there's a lot of kind of, we have like, you know, archaeological findings where you can see kind of on the walls these reliefs where you have, you know, Egyptians baking bread and, you know, brewing beer. And this idea of chametz and matzah, as much as there's numerous kind of approaches for each of them and reasons why we do it, perhaps it was also almost like an anti-Egyptian meal. Like I remember after 9/11, there was some drama with France, right, over who was supporting the coalition, and people said, don't call it French fries anymore, right? We're calling it freedom fries, right? So it's a similar kind of approach over here. You know, how do we break the whole meal is about Egyptian culture, but it's a meal that's being had by families. And I will conclude with perhaps the way that the Jewish people are able to succeed in the way that the Lotz unfortunately failed. And I think, unfortunately, we see in the Midbar, it didn't always work, right, with the first generation that left Egypt. They weren't always able to break with the slave mentality, with escaping kind of Egyptian culture, always wanting to go back. But the place where it starts, really, is the bayit. And I think we saw over and over again that word focusing on the house, on the bayit, on the size of the door. And I think for me personally, it's funny, when I think of Pesach, I always think of it as the most of the family holidays, right? The idea where we always kind of, even if it's not with relatives, but with close friends, always kind of creating the Seder as a meaningful kind of family and friends experience where we talk about our values. And even think about how much of the Seder is focused on children, right? And educating the next generation. And perhaps all of this together, where we have this meal focused on our families in our house, that's kind of the idea where we're able to reinforce those values. What does it mean to think about Jewish identity? What does it mean to live a modern Orthodox life? Like, what does it mean to kind of balance out that idea of assimilation? And how do we make sure that we're only taking positive things and we're really kind of not failing the same way Lot did? So lots to think about. Thank you so much for your contributions, and I'm happy to stick around and discuss if anyone has more ideas. And hopefully we should all have a Chag Pesach Kasher v'Sameach, where we're able to, again, live these values more of the Jewish people leaving Egypt side and not so much of Lot.
Thank you.